south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, this show goes out on December 24th, so Merry Crimble to everyone. And to all my Jewish buddies out there who have Christmas trees, go for it. Kids love that stuff, and adults do too. Oh, and if you want to hear something that's seasonally funny, you might remember me talking about how I went to the stem cell clinic in Puerto Vallarta just about a month and a half ago now. Thing is, you know, I've got two younger brothers in pretty bad shape. One's 50 and he's got something like 14 heart stents. His heart ejection fraction is 30%, so he'll be on a transplant list soon. So stem cells, they're known to work directly on heart muscle. And even as an intermediary step to see what happens after that, who wouldn't do it? Well, I can tell you exactly who. People who say, but insurance won't pay for it. But come on. If that could strengthen your heart muscle and avoid a transplant, who wouldn't do it? You'd be surprised. Some Americans, even really smart ones, won't even get their ugly yellow or discolored front teeth fixed because insurance won't pay. Are you one of those? In fact, I remember this really beautiful girl in high school sat right next to me. She had a gray discolored front tooth. It was just sad to see her parents wouldn't fix it. I ran into her years later, and yeah, she had it fixed. But I think it still left a self-esteem problem that lasted a long time. So anyway, my brother. Of course, his insurance won't pay for stem cells at a 20th or a 50th the cost of a heart transplant. Oh, but they'll pay for stents, transplants, and bypasses. Oh yeah. Same thing with knee and joint replacements. In fact, my own brother told me. The other one, whose knees and shoulders are all screwed up from sports injuries. Just a few months ago, he was scheduled to get a prosthetic knee. And I said, man, are you nuts? Have you heard about stem cells and how they can quite possibly rebuild your cartilage enough so that you don't need a new knee? And his very first question? You guessed it. Will insurance pay for it? I said, no, insurance considers that stuff experimental. He said, well, they'll pay for the artificial knee. And would have done it had I not suggested stem cells, which he'd never heard of. So Americans have been brainwashed with medical treatment. It's all about the money, not the quality or efficacy of the treatment. But you knew that already, right? Well, maybe not all about the money, but there's lots of money in it, and it's hard for someone to accept a totally new kind of treatment that'll cut out a huge amount of income for doctors, hospitals, clinics, and prosthetics manufacturers. So anyway, my brother said, will insurance pay for it? I said, never mind, I'll pay for it. We're going to the stem cell clinic, along with my other brother with the bad heart, of course. Well, as luck would have it, the day before they were supposed to fly down to Puerto Vallarta via Chicago O'Hare Field, my brother with the bad knees, shoulders, and arthritis, and remember, he's only in his 50s, but he walks like a zombie, uses knee braces, a cane, and even gets a wheelchair at the airport. Anyway, because of his bad joints, his arthritis, his high blood pressure, his thyroid issues, his night terrors, and vertigo, he was taking 22 prescription medications a day. And the day before he was supposed to fly out of O'Hare Field to Puerto Vallarta, he was in the shower, had an attack of vertigo, fell down, and broke off his front teeth. I know, I started this out as an upbeat Christmas story, right? Well, I'm getting to that. I know you're wondering, how am I going to get there from here? I'm kind of wondering that myself. So he ended up in the emergency room, spent 4 days in the hospital up in Chicago, and never made it to the stem cell clinic. That was a month and a half ago. Now, fast forward to early December, just 2 weeks ago. Now, if you've been listening to the Expat Files lately, you'll know that I mentioned Expat Eddie was in the Dominican Republic, and he stumbled onto a stem cell clinic that's not highly publicized at all. No glitz, no glamour, no stylish English website. A nice website, to be sure, but it's in Spanish. So gringos and expats just aren't going to find this place, no matter how hard they try. And if they do and hit that Spanish-only website, well, you know how well gringos speak Spanish. They'll get flummoxed and skip over it in a hurry. Anyway, it's early December. Just a couple of weeks ago, my brother's up in the States contemplating getting a knee replacement since he blew off the stem cell appointment in Puerto Vallarta. When you think about it, though, what better candidate for stem cells, huh? Anyway, after Eddie told me about the stem cell clinic in the Dominican Republic, the DR, I went down there myself to visit. And it's everything you want in a natural healthcare center. And because no glitz, no glamour, no marketing machine, the prices are half what they are in Puerto Vallarta. So anyway, my brother got out of the hospital up in the States, recovered a little bit, and I brought him down. So for all of you guys and gals out there who've been asking me how much this stem cell clinic costs and how long you got to be there, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let me tell you about my brother. He's a test case. A really good test case, too, because when we walked in the office and the doctor saw that he's on 22 different medications, the doc rolled his eyes and raised his eyebrows, and he instantly took a pen and started slashing through the list and cut his medications down to 14, right then and there. And he said, you know, after the stem cell treatments, we should be able to get you down to just about 5 or 6. By the way, he said, you're taking so much medication. You've been taking it so long. I'd be willing to bet your vertigo issues and some of your other problems, brain fog and sometimes slurring your words, are related to drug interactions. Who knows? The doc knew my brother was a walking pharmacy. Then he said, you know, we could give you stem cells right now and it'll help. But he said, it's not optimal. The best way to do this is to detoxify your body. Get all the errant chemicals and drugs out of your system. That is, clean you up and clean you out before we give you the stem cells. So you're not up against all the inflammation those drugs are causing. So they worked out a 3-week treatment. The first 2 weeks is detox. No, not from alcohol, but from years of a bad American diet and all those prescription drugs he's been taking. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, my brother's about 40 pounds overweight. Oh, and the one with the heart trouble. The one who had the 300 million stem cells at Puerto Vallarta, along with me, about a month and a half ago. He's about 60 pounds overweight. But he was, for a long, long time, 100 pounds overweight, and that's what did his heart in. So anyway, my brother, with all the joint problems, is going to be in the Dominican Republic for a total of 3 weeks. 2 weeks of chelation and ozone IV, along with a few other treatments. And at the end of week 3, he'll be getting his stem cells and going home. But remember, my brother's body's about as shot as a body could be. He's a pretty extreme case. Over the years, he's had all kinds of cartilage and ligament surgeries due to sports injuries. He was a hockey goalie scouted by the NHL, but he never got that far. He had his first surgery at 19. He's got both knees and both shoulders completely shot. In fact, he's got to take a load of pain pills every night just to fall asleep because his shoulders bother him so much. So he really is the perfect case for us to monitor here on the show for this new stem cell clinic. Oh, and this is what happens the first 2 or 3 days you get down. The steps are similar to the stem cell clinic in Puerto Vallarta. Let's say you start on a Monday. Well, on Monday, you have an hour-long consult with the doc. Then you're sent to a local lab where they do some blood work. Though you can bring your own blood work and radiographic work down if it's recent. And if you got knee, shoulder, or joint problems where they're going to inject stem cells, then the next day, Tuesday, you're scheduled for CT or tomographic scans on the joints they're going to inject. Then Wednesday might be a day off for you for them to analyze all the data. However, if you're loaded up with all kinds of drugs and pain pills like my brother and are on a terrible American diet, they'll start detoxing you right away. Well, this is the thing I really like about this clinic in the DR as opposed to the one in Puerto Vallarta. They'll start detoxing you right away. Whereas from what I can tell in Puerto Vallarta, they don't offer that kind of treatment at all. It's just purely stem cells and some other kind of treatments, but they never mention detoxing people before getting the stem cell. I suppose because people fly into Puerto Vallarta just to get stem cells, they're in a hurry, they get them and go. People are busy, they can't stretch out the appointments, it's boom, boom, boom. Plus, you know, they got to stay in a hotel or try to pretend it's kind of a vacation. But I can see if a person's taking a ton of medications, detoxing before the stem cells would certainly be on the menu. That would really be a sound and logical way to proceed, even if it takes an extra week or two. But you know Americans, we're always in a hurry, right? Who's got 3 weeks to spare to go to a clinic like that unless you're retired? Or heading for a couple of knee and shoulder transplants like my brother. Now, of course, there are people who arrive at the DR clinic and they insist on just getting the stem cells and they're in and out in 3 to 5 days, depending. But at least they do a full workup and offer the detox thing if necessary. I have to tell you, I've been in that stem cell waiting room in office 4 or 5 times now and I haven't seen a single gringo. Lots of Europeans, though, and sort of upscale, wealthier locals. By the way, since I'm down here with my brother in the DR at the stem cell clinic, I've had a chance to talk at great length to the stem cell docs, who unfortunately only speak a slight bit of English. But the senior doc in the clinic, whose wife is at the front desk, is 100% Swiss, and her English is perfect. She's the office manager, and I've had some long talks with her, too, since a lot of you listeners have been asking me about this place. I've got my eyes and ears open, always collecting info. And I know there'll have to be an English liaison, an intermediary, for gringos and expats to take advantage of this place. English speakers will need some hand-holding. You know, filling out the forms, going to the labs, consulting with the docs, transportation and hotels and all that. You know, do whatever necessary to help an English speaker get through the process. Well, the doc's wife, the Swiss office manager who speaks perfect English, is working on it right now. because I told her there are plenty of gringos and expats I know who have a lot of interest in coming down, but they have to have an English-speaking intermediary. She knows she'll have to convert all of their intake forms into English. They're in Spanish now. So anyway, they're working on it, and I'll keep you posted. And, of course, I'll keep you in the loop on how my brother's doing. Oh, and by the way, a few weeks ago when my brother first came down, the clinic gave him the option of getting the blood work done in the States. You know, they'd give him a lab order to take to his lab up in the States. And that would cut a day or two off his trip to the DR. However, the labs in the DR are so inexpensive. My brother chose to go to their labs. It only cost them something like less than $100 for a complete blood workup. And that's without insurance. So anyway, my brother had a rental car, so we drove to the lab. He walked in, we took a number of about 10 people in front of him. I figured about a half hour wait. So we went back to sit in the car for a while. Meanwhile, a big black, kind of battered old SUV pulled up right next to us in the parking lot. A fat older guy with a beard got out, walked into the lab, got his number, came back out, walked over to his car, opened the passenger door, sat in it, and didn't close the door. Now, the DR is hot, really hot, but the parking lot was shaded, so you could sit in your car without turning on the AC, at least for the time being. Just rolling down your windows and maybe cracking open a door to get a breeze was enough. So this fat bearded guy's right next to me, because I'm in the driver's seat of the rental car. He's in the passenger seat of his kind of battered black SUV. And he says, "Oh, gringos, huh?" He said it in good but broken English, and I recognized it as Northern European English. Now, this guy did not look Latino. He was, in fact, kind of a redhead, mixed in with lots of gray. Meanwhile, my brother and I stick out like sore thumbs because we're really white, tall, blue eyes, and, well, gringoish. By the way, I got to tell you, the capital of Santo Domingo, it's a huge city, something like 6 million people, is off the gringo tourist trail. When people go to the DR, they don't go to Santo Domingo for vacation and sun and fun. They go to Punta Cana, the western tip of the island where all the white sand beach resorts are, which is around 3 or 4 hours away from Santo Domingo by car. Anyway, this rotund bearded European guy says, "Hey, in his staccato Northern European English, will you do me a favor? I've got to go back into the laboratory clinic. Can you keep an eye on the things in my car?" He said, "I'd like to leave the windows rolled down and the hatch back up because I left my window open last night and it rained. And the car upholstery and some of my clothes got wet." He said, "I'll be back in 10 minutes. And I said, "Sure, we'll keep an eye on it." Now, you got to know that was part of the gringo advantage kicking in, because you just don't ask a stranger to watch your car with the windows and hatchback open. Sure, it was a gated, guarded parking lot, so it was pretty secure in that respect, but you just don't ask somebody you don't know. The only explanation is he saw we were gringos. The stereotype of gringos is that we're pretty honest and dependable. And most of us are, except in California and maybe Costa Rica. So anyway, he went in, and naturally, my brother and I were curious. What does this guy have in the car that got all wet and needed to air out? So we got out, walked around, and looked into the hatchback. You won't believe this. There was a complete and really nice Santa Claus outfit with a big red sack for Santa's toys hanging over the back seat drip-drying. This roly-poly guy's job was being Santa Claus. No damp and moldy Santa Claus outfit for him. Santa Claus needs to make a good impression, right? Tis the season. With Santa, it's all about image. Now, if you think I'm making this up, I took some photos of this guy's SUV with the back hatch open. Send me an email to expatfiles@gmail.com and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, enough said about that. Don't forget, just 2 months from now, my Expat Insider Seminar will be kicking off February 18th, 2022. Oh, and I've got some people looking for roommates. You know, there's a single and double occupancy price, and the double occupancy price is more than $1,000 cheaper if you divide it by two. And occasionally, single folks want to get that deal too, but, you know, they're single. So we connect the people that want to do that so they can talk to each other, see if they're compatible and stuff. And if it's a go, each one of them saves almost $1,000 off single occupancy price. All you have to do is put up with the other guy's snoring, sleepwalking, and or bad bathroom habits, or not, for a week, and save almost $1,000. At every single seminar now, except I think the first one, some people requested roommates. And every single time, except one, it worked out really well. And if you want to know what happened that one time it didn't work out, well, I'll tell you in person. Just come down to my February 2022 Expat Insider Seminar. For all the info and sign-up details, just go to expatplanb.com. That's all one word, expatplanb.com. And that B in the plan B is not spelled like a buzzing insect. It's the regular letter B. Just go to the seminar link at expatplanb.com. And don't worry, keeping with the woke curriculum you're all used to up in the States, All seminar attendees will be getting a participation trophy. By the way, let's talk about getting residency, because some people come to the seminar applying for Guatemala residency when they get there. But this applies to any Latin American country you're going for residency in. You know, you'll need an FBI report, unless you're not from the States. Like, for example, if you're from Canada, you'll need an RCMP conduct report, otherwise known as a clean rap sheet. And remember, those residency requirements say that you'll need those docs apostilled, which means, in case of the U.S., authenticated by the U.S. government. But you should know that your docs aren't all apostilled at the same agency. For example, for your birth certificate, you'll have to get it apostilled in the state you were born in. You do it by mail on your state government's website. There is a section called Authentication of Documents. You click there and you can do it all by snail mail. It takes about 2 weeks. But that FBI report, it has to be apostilled by the feds. Now, why they don't do that or include that process when you order an FBI report, I don't know. Because it's the same federal government, right? Typical shit for brains bureaucracy. Anyway, you get your FBI report. And the big hassle there is you have to submit fingerprints. So you'll have to go down to your local sheriff's or police station and get fingerprints done. You can't do it at home with finger paints, no matter how good you are at it from your own visits to the slammer. Or not. So you get the fingerprints. You mail it into the FBI. Your FBI report comes back in about 2 weeks. I know that for a fact because I just helped my brother do it about 4 months ago. So you get it back in 2 weeks, and then you have to have it apostilled. So you go to the U.S. government website, to the Authentication of Documents link, and they'll tell you there how to do it and where to send it. And here's another odd thing about the FBI report. They won't send it to an address outside the country. So if you're applying for residency and you're living outside the U.S., you'll have to have it sent to a relative or a friend or something, and then have them send it by UPS or DHL to you. Though you will be able to access it online because they'll give you a password and a little card with scrambled numbers on it so that every time you go to that FBI website, you have to plug in a password and a code to look at it. I just have to assume they've double passworded it because hackers are breaking in government sites so often and making fools out of them, like they needed any extra help. Oh, and here's something, if you're getting residency, you really need to know. That is, if you're getting Social Security or Social Security disability. When you're going for residency, you have to prove to them that you're making a certain amount of money a month and you're not living off the resources of the country you're moving to. That's why it's so easy for pensioners and Social Security recipients to get residency. They can generally prove they're over the necessary amount just with that yearly printout from Social Security or disability. Now remember, we were talking about the FBI report and birth certificate getting apostilled, right? Well, what about that Social Security or disability income statement? Well, guess what? No one will apostille that thing because it doesn't have a real government person's signature on it. It's just a printout, right? So then what? Well, many Latin countries will accept the Social Security printout for residency applications as long as that printout comes directly from the Social Security office located at the Social Security desk in the embassy of the particular given Latin country that you're applying for residency in. Clear as mud, huh? In fact, just a couple of months ago, a retired gringo listener living in the DR told me he went for residency there and found out it was impossible to get a federal apostille on his Social Security statement. And even if he could, the feds won't send an apostille doc by mail outside the U.S., as mentioned. So he was stuck momentarily till he visited his Dominican lawyer, who told him to call the U.S. Embassy in the DR and ask for the Social Security desk and request a copy with their stamp and seal on it. He said he emailed them, got back a computerized response saying they'll get back to him in a week or so. That's good, huh? And then he called the embassy, getting an automated response that said the Social Security desk was open for 2 hours in the morning from 10 to noon, and to call and ask for so-and-so extension number. So he did that. It took him 4 days to get through. Every time he called between the correct times, 10 and noon, he'd get another recording saying, "Hold the line. We'll answer your call within 20, 30, 40, even 50 minutes, whatever." And when he tried to stay on hold, after about 15 minutes each time, he got cut off completely. And man, that's a moment of phone rage. I know it well. How about you? You've been on hold 15 or 20 minutes and they cut you off too? At that point, you want to bust somebody's nose. I know the feeling. Eventually, in 4 days, he got through by speed dialing at exactly 8 o'clock on that fourth day. And the lady at the DR Social Security desk, she spoke perfect English. At U.S. embassies in Latin countries, you press 2 for English. Well, as it turned out, the Social Security lady told him with all the COVID-iot crap, they would not let him come down and pick up a hard copy personally himself. After all, Fauci and Puddinhead Biden say it's a plague. So they emailed him his Social Security statement, and he printed it out. Nice copy in color, too, and his DR lawyer submitted it to the residency immigration department, and it went through fine. Though the lawyer said pre-COVID, that would have never flown. Moral of that story? That's why people absolutely need to be in close contact with their personal Latin lawyer, because the rules are always changing. Even within different countries, they can be bent, and only your lawyer knows how far to bend things. Speaking of bending the system, I'm still getting a steady trickle of emails from people saying, Johnny, I heard that expat Eddie story a month or so back, where he went to get vaxxed. The sympathetic doc just loaded up the syringe, laid it down on the countertop right next to Eddie, winked and said, here's your vax, and walked out. At least I think that's how it happens. Every time Eddie tells a story, it comes out a little different. As it turns out, you know, there are sympathetic doctors in every Latin country. So how do you find them? Well, that's what all these guys and gals in these emails are asking me. Now, I don't suggest you do anything illegal, but the way expat Eddie found that guy, he asked his Latino lawyer. Latin lawyers, they know everything. They have to. And they, too, will never tell you or coerce you into doing anything illegal, but they always know a guy who knows a guy, if you know what I mean. Wait a minute. That statement was sexist. There was something cancelable about it, right? Should I have said he knows a girl who knows a girl? Or he knows a they who know a they? Well, I'll tell you what, not in Latin America. I've tried to explain what's going on with the cancel culture to many a smart Latinos, and they still don't get it. They don't think the U.S. has gone completely off its rocker, only because they don't believe or even understand what cancel culture is. They've got this really great image of the U.S. burnt into their mind from so many years of Hollywood and Friends, Retardassians, America's Got Talent, and the Flintstones. They just don't see that the U.S. has completely fallen apart. For Latinos who've never lived in the States, they preferred the Hollywood and Disney version. All right, now for something completely different, but of great interest. Now, I realize the world runs on plastic. Everybody whips out the card. Personally, I've got one credit and one debit card. The debit card I use only, I mean only, to pull out cash at a cash machine in front of or in a bank. I'll never buy anything with it. I just know way too many people who've got fraudulent charges on their credit and debit card statements. In fact, I don't think I've known a single person ever, even in the U.S., who hasn't had a fraudulent charge they had to fight. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't use your credit cards when you're traveling around. I mean, you can't avoid it sometimes, like with airlines and hotels. That includes all the online stores, too. Though as for walk-ins at hotels, you can give them an expired credit card and pay cash when you leave. They'll never know the card was invalid unless you actually charge on it. The thing is, not so long ago, even here in Latin America, people rarely use credit cards. Now they use them for a $2 purchase at McDonald's. So I've kind of settled into one little rule for myself. I'll use credit cards where you can't get around it, like booking an airline flight online. But I'll still never use a credit card in a restaurant or eating establishment, nor any hardware or department store either. It's a rule I've stuck to for 30 plus years now. Why no restaurants? The staff seems a lot looser. There's a lot less security. That credit or debit card goes through a lot of hands and gets peered at by a lot of eyeballs before it gets processed. So yes, that's right. I always have some cash on me. And I always have at least $500 in U.S. funny money in my zipper belt, which I always wear when I'm going out. Now, if you do have that plan B going, you know you'll need a bank account here in Latin America, and you'll get a credit card and a debit card along with that. You'll have online banking, too, and if you're lucky, you'll be able to click for English. Even so, not everything will be in English on that website. Hey, nothing wrong with that. It actually helps you, or forces you, to learn your Spanish, right? Thing is, what if you look at your monthly statement and see there's a fraudulent charge on there? Imagine how tough it is up in the States when you have a fraudulent charge. All the hoops you have to jump through, all the numbers you have to call, all the time wasted being put on hold. It's bad enough when it happens up in the States, but imagine now it happens to you and your credit card charges are in Spanish. Your online banking site is mostly in Spanish. And when you call your bank, your receptionist answers in Spanish too. Nope, you don't want that to happen to you. In fact, it's never happened to me yet, and I've had Latin bank credit cards for a quarter of a century now. God, that makes me sound so ancient, huh? So up to now, I've never had a fraudulent charge. I know what it's due to the fact that I don't charge much at all. Only online, and never at restaurants, food joints, gas stations, or appliance stores. So think about that once you get down here to Latin America. That is, if your plan B's on the move. By the way, on a related note, you want to hear a story? Sure you do. Turns out, gringo expat friend of mine knows some Spanish, says he wants to open his own bank account in Guatemala, instead of paying a local lawyer $50 to help him open one. His girlfriend, who's a call center manager in Guatemala City, she said she'd be his reference. So he went to the bank, used her as a reference, got his account. Only took him about 2.5 hours. Of course, he had to provide 3 months of bank statements from his bank back in, I think it's Cincinnati, plus a letter of reference from his bank in Cincinnati, you know, saying he's been a good long-standing client. Anyway, success. Next day, he went on his online banking, couldn't get in. He hoofed it down to the bank. He waited and waited at customer service an hour and a half later. They produced 3 forms he had to sign. Then the attendant picked up the phone, called another department in the bank in another building somewhere. He had to repeat his credit card numbers and type in his password on the keypad. She told him to go to his internet banking site on his cell phone. It asked him to put in a new password, etc. And he was in. Next day, he was home. He wanted to move some money from his dollar account at that new bank into his Quetzal local funny money, Guatemalan money account. He went online, put in his password, clicked on internal account transfers, and nothing happened. He hoofed it down to the bank again, waited about 45 minutes at customer service. The lady produced another form for him to sign. He signed it, and she said, in 24 hours, your account will be completely activated. And it was. But think about it. The guy wasted at least an entire day just hurrying up and waiting. And he knew Spanish. Moral of that story, get your lawyer or lawyer's assistant to go down to the bank with you and open an account. So what if it costs you 50 or 75 bucks? It's worth it. Unless you got way more time than money. The question is, though, why didn't they do all that stuff in the very first day while he was sitting there? Now you know why they call Latin America the third world. Is it a slap in the face? Is it rude? Is it a cut down? Nope, it's just the way it is. There's first, second, third, and fourth world. And there's a reason why those designations exist. Anyway, you'll like this. A recent study of credit card cloning around Latin America says that for under 10 bucks, you can go on the dark web and buy all the information printed on 4 million different credit cards for under 10 bucks each. And as far as Latin America, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and Brazil were found to be at the highest risk of having their details stolen and sold or cloned in Latin America. Fact is, it says you can go online, the dark web, right now and buy 220,000 credit card details from cloned or stolen Brazilian credit cards and 350,000 stolen or cloned Mexican credit cards. And it says Puerto Rico has a higher degree of credit card risk than any of the 50 U.S. states. And get this. Oh, and if you want this article, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send it to you. It's pretty interesting. It says, Mexico, Brazil, and Puerto Rico might account for the lion's share of stolen credit cards in Latin America. Though, funny enough, buying the details of these cards on the dark web is not expensive. The average cost was just $2.36 per card in Mexico and $6.54 in Brazil, among the easiest and cheapest to buy in all the regions. Most likely because in those countries they have low-limit credit cards and thieves can only extract up to the limit. Now, the Latin country that's least likely to have credit cards cloned or stolen is Venezuela. A country of 28 million people that had only 750 credit cards cloned all last year. That's because the credit card limit ceiling on Venezuelan bank credit cards is under 10 bucks. Yep, that's the limit and more than a month's salary for most Venezuelans.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.